start to feel that the collective consciousness is getting stronger and stronger, so there's more and more people get aware of the reality, how truth really are. Yeah.
Because we live on this earth and we act as if we own it. We think about it, as you said earlier, about as a resource as opposed to as being an equal, which it most certainly is. And we are going to discover that very strongly over the next few years, I think.
Absolutely. And things like the commodification of water is just the most dangerous thing that any
How can any
government could do that?
Think that they got the right to sell a river? I mean, what are you talking about? The river doesn't belong to you.
It's sheer lunacy.
And it is, I mean, we're putting a bore down right now. We're taking water out of whatever is under there. And we just talked about the trees on the hills being able to get their roots into the water. You know, so it's very hard to strike a balance with that sort of thing, you know what I mean?
It is, but you're putting a bore down so that this piece of land can
thrive,
stay and regenerate.
Yes.
Or generate.
Generate again. Yes. It's certainly generating again rather beautifully there. It's, you know, we haven't seen... The bushes are recovering quite well. It's not a huge piece of bush. It's only maybe three quarters of an acre that's actually bush here. But it's, you know, most of it's come back. I haven't seen many orchids yet, but I hope that's just because I haven't been there at time. Or last year they didn't flower, or maybe they were damaged, too damaged to flower in the first year. But, yeah.
So what would you say to young couples wanting to come and live in the hills?
That's a good question. I would say there is nothing better than living in a place of nature for children and for them as well. But it's really so enriching, and it gives you a really beautiful set of metaphors through which you can live with nature. Sense of seasons and of generation and metamorphosis and all those sort of things that are really useful for the flexibility of the mind. But as far as staying safe, then you do what is... you live according to what is recommended, really. If you go into a house that is an old house and it's not terribly well set up, then you set it up as well as you can, and you take the precautions that are necessary.
So you don't believe it was a one-off?
I definitely don't believe it was a one-off. Well, we had one here, you know. Parts of it on the southern edge there had burnt 5 years before in the Samson flat fire. And then they burned again this time around. So, you know, it's not something that you can expect is going to go away forever. I think that people will be much more careful, and I think there will be a lot more care about the problems of the movement of fire. But it's not unlikely that it'll happen again. I think it's possibly even just the beginning of much worse fires, because we have climate change.
There's just one thing. Yes, I understand climate change. I'm very much against it. But let's face it, who started that fire? It was the electric wire that the tree fell on it, and it started it.
Yes,
so why was the electricity there? So aren't we responsible for that? We put the electrical wire there.
Yes, but that's not going to stop from happening again.
No, but it could change. That's it. If they all go solar, it won't happen again.
Yes. Because that day, we have seen days like that before, but not so many. It was so erratic, the winds and the heat and the way it was working, that I think we'll see more of it. You know, and in fact, I think that's what, sadly, I think that's what we have to go through for the general populace to stand up and say enough. We refuse to take part in this anymore. We must ameliorate, or whatever the word is, climate change. We must work towards that.
So what do you think of the application of Indigenous wisdom when it comes to cool fires?
Oh, absolutely imperative.
Perfect.
Absolutely imperative. We should be there, working with, we should be asking them for their wisdoms all the time. Because their coal burns are even better than the ones that, you know, much better than the ones that the fireys here will do. The CFS burnt off a patch over here in Bushland Park. Bushland Park is a bushland area of, I don't know, it must be about 20 or 30 acres, I suppose. And I might be completely wrong about that. And they burnt an area of it the year before the fire, a coal burn, but they did it in like the early summer, sort of, and it was... It ended up being quite a hot fire, so it did, in fact, singe the canopy, which the Aboriginal burns don't. Mm. They do them very carefully in very small patches, and they just burn the undergrowth. And but the difference between that coal burn, there was an area in Bushland Park that was coal burnt. The other area wasn't burnt. When the fires went through, it burnt both areas, and quite a lot of the locals saying, well, why did we even bother with a coal burn? Because it burnt anyway. But the difference now is those trees have crowns. They actually have the full canopy 2 years later, or even a year later, they had the full canopy, whereas the rest of the park, these trees are growing from the base. The crowns are gone altogether.
So they're in full recovery mode, mm-hmm. but the other trees...
Are pretty much
like they were.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. It speaks volumes.
It does, absolutely volumes. Yeah, I'd love to be able to work with Aboriginal people on this little block of land for a start. But yeah, I mean, I was always the word is possibly hungry for the wisdoms that could be that could help me manage this piece of land.
I like to think that we could do that we could manage that mm-hmm. that we could all work together.
Yes,
because I think it's the only way forward.
That's what it was.
I think across the world.
The things what you're doing now, that rise of awareness amongst people who hears that one, they say, oh, attention, there's something wrong here.
So I'd just like to ask one more thing. Well, there's two things, really. I believe that there's a really strong community, Hills community, and that helped people survive. But also, after the fires, was that community spirit strengthened as a result of the fires. So I'd be interested in your views on that.
I would say very, very much so. And still is. Because we are sitting here in our new house that we moved into only a year after.
Which
was terribly, terribly lucky. We are in various Facebook groups and involved with various people who are still grating their nose against the council regarding the colour of their roof, for example, or any other amount of council regulations. And so they haven't broken ground yet. So there's still a lot of care that needs to be taken for people. Because we've had COVID and we've still got COVID, and we've basically, the society has forgotten. You know, it's old news. You know, but there's people still here struggling away. And regarding community support, there's a lot of interconnection. I'm certainly doing a lot of interconnection with people where I'm trying to give them access to information you know, so any time there's something comes up, for example, there was some information about mental health that I got that nobody else had got. So I put that information out there so people can have it.
Do you know other people? Do you know the other people that lost their homes?
I personally know about maybe 5 or 6, 7, 8, something like that. But there were close to 80. Yeah, it's a huge number.
And then there would have been a whole lot of people who lost things like fencing or stock or sheds or...
Yes. And I think that they felt early on, people who didn't lose their house but lost an awful lot else felt somewhat neglected, really. And some of them are still struggling. You know, our neighbour at the back here is still struggling with his fences.
I heard of one family who had this whole guilt thing because their house didn't burn, whereas the houses near them did. And that whole guilt complex of...
Survivor's guilt, yes. The whole, I think that, that a lot of the community went through that. Like even people in the towns, they just... Everyone was shocked and everybody... In fact, the psychologist who was employed to... He's a guy who works in disaster recovery psychology, and he says that in the second year it's actually the general populace that has a lot of problems, because the people who have lost major things, they've had to do the work and they can in fact see change, you know, even though they may still be trying to, you know, shift earth, they know that they have processes that they can go through to get to where they want to go. The general populace just is just like there's no nothing that says, okay, that's over now, you know, and they feel worse. Because it's trauma. It doesn't matter whether you witnessed it or you went through it, it's trauma.
Look,
unbelievable trauma.
I'm not very much feeling guilty, but I do feel guilty. Little house was finished and the neighbours are still struggling to get in there, and there were three beautiful children. You know, it's not...
Yes.
And it's this kind of a drama, so this brings the good out of people.
That's true.
You know, I mean, before times and times, when I come first here to Lomathol, I was persecuted constantly. They tried to burn me down twice. And all that sort of things. I didn't even know anybody, just because I started a business, and because of the an elder from the Lutherans didn't want that anybody else had a business here. Yeah. So he got some. I had to go to Bahana to buy some goods because people wouldn't deal with me here.
It was a racism thing.
And that exactly. But brought Lomathol there. Since that's finished, Lomathol started to come up. And now we've got a beautiful community, people who appreciate each other.
So talking about the clean slate thing, immediately after the fires, well, you know, 5 days after the fires or something, we came up here to the what was then the recovery centre, and to sort of register and do all those sorts of things. Standing outside was one of the people who Irvin had had run-ins with, about, you know, racist run-ins with, who had given him a hard time. And we stood in the car, and Evan says, I don't want to go in there because he's there. And I said, clean slate. We have to put all that stuff behind us. And we did. And as we walked in, he came over to us and he said, I'm so sorry to hear that your house burned down.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's...
How did that feel?
Sorry?
How did that feel?
Yeah, it's good, yeah.
Clean slate.
Clean slate, yeah. Double the bars up.
So you can put an awful lot behind yourself. And that, you know, when you go through a really major change like that, there are, you really have a new possibility of a new way of living. By the same token, you're busily trying to get the old way back. You know, because you miss it.
What did you do for things like sheets and, you know, basics, like sheets and towels and all the stuff that you need just for day to day?
Well, in our case, and I think in most cases, there was an awful lot of... well, we went to live with my daughter, so their house was very crowded, but they had the basic stuff there.
Yeah.
We stayed there probably close to 6 months. Up here, there was a recovery centre that had where people donated stuff.
Okay.
A huge amount of donated goods, more than they could manage actually. And so you could go and get yourself some a set of sheets, and you know you'd go there and you'd see that they were shifting, which is something that actually you usually can't get secondhand. You know, the secondhand mattresses coming in. And, so.
And do you still go into your cupboard and think, I'll wear that, and it's not there?
No, but the clothes thing is interesting, actually, because you get given all this stuff, and you have no idea what it's like. You know, you feel like you, you know, and you don't have any connection to it, so you don't know what goes with what. Or any of that sort of stuff. After we moved to, in fact, even when we were living down in town, we said we lined Hans Beck's shed to live in. Which was fine until winter came, and we had to walk through the rain to the toilet. And so then we moved up to Woodside, where we had a rental house. Now, that house didn't have any mirrors. It only had, like, a little bathroom mirror for your head. So for a good 6 months, I had no idea what I was wearing. It was very strange.
You know, little things like that you just wouldn't think of.
You know, if you did get what it is, the goodness of people, we all hear all these news. On the news, you get, they always speak on the bad dramas and the ugly people and what have you. One day, we went home and there was a post, luggage, a message for us.
Package.
So I opened it, and from a complete stranger, I didn't know who it was, there was a big box of Japanese carving chisels. That didn't even know existing in Australia, because the person you are doing lots of wood carving, from a complete stranger. So thank you, I would never get that. You're so happy to have it.
And yes, we looked up through the sort of marks that she had to put on, the postal marks, and we found her eventually. Yes, and it turns out that she had been a bushfire victim when she was a teenager. And she knew us through another person who had shared that fire with her. These connections. And the kindness of people, my goodness, it's there was just so much kindness and so much giving that it's quite humbling, incredibly humbling.
There's a sort of a almost cruelty that COVID came so soon after the... after the fires, because that sort of recovery that you need from fires was almost shifted.
Yes. Well, there's two things to do with that. One is, yes, that it just went out of people's mind, though it was actually still quite well run here in South Australia. The recovery centre here in Lowthal was really very good, and it ran right through COVID.
Okay.
It was considered an essential service, which was lucky. The thing that, I mean, apart from it going out of people's minds, there was something else I can't remember.
There was a big fear factor, I think, also with COVID, that it engendered a fear that we sort of hadn't felt before. Like, we talk about community spirit, but then the next thing we were told about social distance and and keeping away from people and the whole.
I remember what it was now. That after trauma, after a major sort of catastrophe like that, communities, at the beginning, they're just running on adrenaline and they are just trying to get themselves into, you know, to have a mattress and basic necessities and a roof. But at about the three-month mark, there's this need for the community to come together and share their stories with each other, and that coincided with COVID. So they couldn't do that, and that's actually a very important part of the recovery process, according to the psychologists.
It was a very strange use of language too, social distancing.
Yes.
You know, like you can, you get physical distance, you're going to be physically removed from each other because of contagion, but social...
Social, that means I'm not allowed to phone you up.
It was completely the wrong word.
Completely wrong word.
Yes.
Everybody needs to be social. And they need to be socially close. That was a terrible use of language.
I think so.
And particularly for people that were in trauma.
Mm.
Yes. One of the biggest problems, I think, generally speaking, is for me, is the politicians. Yeah. Because they strive on getting fear into you. Mm. And because they control you better if you are frightened. Yeah. And therefore, there's lots of people who are against the politicians, quite rightfully so, but they also become... that they create a new idea, like the COVID doesn't exist. You know, that's sort of a silly thing. And people, you know, thousands of people died because of it. How can they say such a thing?
That's incredibly scary.
Yeah.
It is. Mm. It's very scary. Mm-hmm. About, it says an awful lot about the way we get our information and how easily we can be manipulated.
And we... almost, you know, we're talking about community, but in another way we're almost polarized mm. now. Mm. And the world seems to be going that way. It's not just us. It's
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I never see Australia or Germany or Russia or Hungary, you know, it's people.
Mm. Mm.
And I don't know why that is so. Mm. It is so. And I believe, you know, when we're talking the world, that we, you know, I'm very keen on thinking that things are changing and people get more and more aware. But if I listen to the history or what happened, well, history you can't trust because it depends on who wrote it. Yeah. But there is a time, according to some, when our civilization was much higher than now, until we wiped ourselves out. But of course we don't remember that. And it seems to be doing the same thing now.
I don't know about that, but we certainly, I don't know how we're going to manage, because basically I think that what happened, it needs to happen, is that people need to come together as a whole.
Mm.
We need to work together, and I think eventually we will, but goodness, we have to get to such an extreme before we can.
Mm.
Yeah. So the polarisation is terribly worrying.
And you've written a book?
I've got three books out of it. Three books of poetry. One is Irvin's stories of his life. They're poetry, so that one's called Sparrow. And Sparrow Poems of a Refugee, and it's his stories told in first person as poems. And then I have one that is more autobiographical, and one that was done just before the fire, for an exhibition that was shown just after the fire, called Solastalgia. And Solastalgia is the name of the exhibition. Solastalgia means the emotions one feels at the loss of loved environments. So that was put in place prior to the fire to show in Lowenthal after the fire.
Did you make that word up?
No. It's it is an actual word. It was only. It's only about 100 years old, though, about a little bit over 100 years old. Yeah.
And where can people buy your books?
You can buy them through any bookseller or any online bookseller. The publisher is Ginninderra Press.